The mustering today, Blurt. G'day, Seb.
Hey, boss.
Right here, blokes. Can I have your attention, please? Tonight it's Charlie's turn to entertain us. Blue's had his turn. Playing 500 again.
And we gave you a good thrashing, too.
You bent the rules to do it, eh?
Poor bloody losers.
Joe choked his old hound on it to pizza.
She's a bloody good tucker, too, mate.
I'd kill a brown dog.
What's hers on your chest?
Oh, the cook's a basket case.
Who called a cook a bastard?
Who called the bastard a cook?
Yeah, you want to have a fight, huh?
Cool it. Now, Charlie, these blokes have been away from the homestead for a month, and we're still not done. So I hope you got something good for us. Thanks, Stumpy.
It's good, all right. Let's say it's a tonic. It'll do your power a good.
A tonic? You put any rum in it?
Now, steady on. I've played Bluey's card games and I ate Joe's pizza. I listened to Percy's poetry. I laughed at Sen's tall stories. So I've paid all my debts in advance. So tonight is something special. Something important.
So it is drinking rum after all.
Has to be.
No, mates, I'm going to slake your thirst for knowledge. I'm reading your letter. I got Stumpy to come out from town to bung in a bit of music and sound effects.
Done. Gross.
Cool.
All right, Dorothy Dix, let's get on with it.
Yeah.
All right, Charlie, for richer or poorer, let's have it.
Dear mates, as one Australian among many for constitutional monarchy, I figure it's time to say a few words. Every Australian knows you can't play football without a referee. And we've all seen some shockers refereeing, but some methods of choosing them are better than others. At the moment in Australian politics, we've basically got two teams, the Liberals in the blue jerseys and the ALP in the red. Most of our politicians are proposing that we choose the referee from among the players. They call it republicanism. Sure, the spectators in the stands get a choice, but what a choice! A politician from one team or a politician from the other for president. Either way, it's one of them. No wonder they think it's a good idea.
Bloody politicians.
Yeah, they're all the same.
Yeah, we should stop voting for them. Only encourages them.
For a politician, it's like having a ticket in the lotto. The winner could just be me. So, why don't Aussie football spectators insist on choosing the referee from among the players? Because we believe in a fair go, mate. Deep in our hearts, we know that it's no good if the referee is biased. It's no good either if the referee, however fair, doesn't have a whistle. Of course, when you get to politics, the whistle is very serious business. It's the army, it's guns.
Well done, Stumpy!
Yay! Yay!
Now, in 1975, when the Governor General blew the whistle and ordered a scrum to pack down, many thought he called it wrong. And they threw a few beer cans. But we all noticed one thing. All the players did exactly what he said to decide who got possession of the ball, and they did so for one reason. The bloke with the whistle was the Commander-in-Chief of the Australian Army, the Royal Australian Navy, and the RAAF. Even Wally Lewis couldn't tackle that, so how would you rate that fat rabble in Canberra?
If their mouths were mortars, they'd make a showing.
Well, when you give it a go, how does republicanism work out? When you get right down to it, it all depends on who's got the whistle that makes the army jump. Most republics in the world, especially those in South America and Africa, have won long fight to see who in the army can grab the whistle next. But what about in Europe? Yeah, the Europeans have done a little better, but a few small points might be raised. And what about France? After they had their revolution, they got rid of the king. They had a republic. Shortly after, a bloke called Napoleon became very popular in the army. As the new referee, he even crowned himself emperor, and that's fair dinkum history. As referee, coach and captain, he was soon trying to score under all the goalposts in Europe. In the end, a mob from across the water with a constitutional monarchy got sick of it. So they went over and shot his team and put him in the sin bin. Now, what about Germany? Well, they once had what they called the Weimar Republic and elected a politician called Hitler. Sure, he didn't get a majority of the votes, only 46%. But our ALP only got 38% before preferences in the last election anyhow. Well, Hitler burnt the Parliament House, and when the president died, he invented a new word for referee called Führer and decided he was it. Then he conquered all the grandstands and took the spectators captive. And then there's Italy. Italy once had a king. But like us, the monarchy didn't seem to have much of a team at the time. So Mussolini locked him up in his house and made everyone come and watch himself standing on balconies and waving his hands around very dramatically. Later, he sent big mobs of the spectators into the African desert to fight a composite team from constitutional monarchies called Poms, Aussies and Kiwis. The spectators from Italy mostly concentrated on fighting their way into prisoner of war camps. When the captain is an absolute ratbag, life in the sin bin is an attractive option. So that only leaves Russia and America. Well, in Russia, after the Tsar abdicated, a bloke called Lenin, who got the idea from another bloke called Marx, that's not Groucho Marx, he put it about that his team were historically inevitable winners. You may have heard that a republic is inevitable too. After a particularly bloody brawl, they eventually got the referee's whistle and set up their republic. They called it a union of socialist ones. Then they took all the spectators' property off them, and if anybody wouldn't pretend to like it, they made them work inside a refrigerator with practically no food in it. And then they made a mistake. They locked up a bloke called Solzhenitsyn. He was amazing. Mostly for believing in unusual ideas like God, and that constitutional monarchy was better than slaving and starving in a refrigerator. Later on, he wrote these ideas down, but you had to sneak out the back to have a read. Well, eventually, some other fellow who jumped onto a tank and made a speech was made referee. The Republic broke to smithereens, and so far, everybody who tries to fix it only makes it worse. But Solzhenitsyn has written a book called Rebuilding Russia, and constitutional monarchy might get a go in the end. Just now, everyone is too busy fixing things to read the manual. The same sort of blokes live in my street, too. So, at last you know where the expression "thank God for America" came from. Yeah, the Republicans. You got to admit it. They've really done very well, the Americans. The strongest nation on earth is a republic. Impressive. Sure, they had one civil war, the bloodiest war in history at the time, and every couple of decades or so, the citizens try to burn down and loot a city like Chicago or Los Angeles. But even so, I'm impressed. I really am. Seriously impressed. How do they do it? Well, there's one thing in the American Constitution which is not in any other republic's constitution on earth. Every American has a constitutional right to bear arms. And most of them do. Yeah, the president's got the referee's whistle. He plays in the game as well, and when he blows his whistle, the most powerful military in the world jumps. So why do their presidents go meekly when time's up? Simple. The spectators have 500 million pistols, rifles and machine guns all up. 6 million Americans belong to just one shooters club, the NRA. Switzerland, the richest country in the world, is a republic. For every able-bodied Swiss male, having a modern military rifle in his home is compulsory. Check it out, it's fair income, all right? The Swiss have an election every 3 months, not to elect politicians, but to vote out any legislation the police have passed and the people don't like. They call it voter's veto, but more of that later. So, republics will work in a nation of cowboys, or if you keep an M16 on the mantelpiece. All right, but bloody hell, I thought this was Australia. But I'm not telling you that we haven't got any problems with our constitutional monarchy. We have. It's supposed to work like this. The Queen of Australia is the referee-in-chief. But because she can't attend the game, being too far away, she appoints a replacement referee. Now, neither of them are allowed to make any rules, it's legislation, or to touch the ball in play. But when things get out of hand, they can blow the whistle and get everybody back to playing the game properly. Now, the political game we play in Aussie is called democracy. So before we crown our referee monarch, we make him or her sit in one of the biggest churches around and swear on a stack of Bibles that they will referee the Poms, Aussies, Kiwis and so on, according to their respective laws and customs. And that's a direct quote from the coronation oath. More than that, the way it works is when the Pollies make a new rule, it's called a bill. And no bill is legal until it becomes an act. That's because a bill has to have the okay from the referee before it's official. It is the act of the monarch in signing it that makes it an enforceable act of Parliament. And yet the Queen doesn't have to sign anything. And there's only one thing in the rule book about it, the bit in the coronation oath. The Queen, or her stand-ins, are supposed to make sure that a bill is in accordance with our laws and customs before they give it the okay. But you see, there's a very big problem. They don't do it. I'll explain why soon, but first some examples. The Queen is supposed to appoint an independent referee as Governor General. Now, if we ever had a custom that was a true blue Aussie one, it's a fair go for all. The appointments of Governors General such as Sir Paul Hasluck and Bill Hayden, who were politicians, reckoned for their own sides from the year dot, was not conspicuous impartiality. And furthermore, the Queen, or her independent impartial replacement, for whom she must take personal responsibility, are not supposed to sign anything until they're satisfied that it is according to our laws and customs. Does anyone deny that democracy, in governing with the consent and agreement of the governed, is part of our customs? No way, mate. Well, are the referees doing the right thing? A good example is the All Blacks a few years ago. Over 860,000 Kiwis wrote to their parliament, the largest petition in the history of the world, yet one of its smallest countries, to say straight out that they didn't agree with what their politicians wanted. Well, the Kiwi governor ignored even this and okayed the bill. If this was upholding the custom that government is to be with the consent of the governed, then I'm a Dutchman. Another example is a few years ago, the Pollies in Canberra and every state parliament too got together to try to make it impossible, or almost, for the Queen's referees at federal and state levels to say no to the Pollies' wishes. It's called the Australia Act. And even the Queen signed this. Truth, you'd think she wasn't present at her own coronation. Now, I'm not blaming the Queen, or me mates either. And I'm not even blaming the politicians. Those bastards just can't help themselves. But we need to do something about it.
It'll have to be good, Charlie.
How about we tar and feather them?
Nah, don't try to understand them. Just rope and throw and brand them.
The problem we've got to solve is this. The politicians have been calling the referees bluff because they haven't been hearing from us. We got to do two things about this. Find out and yell out.
Let's give them a serve.
Who's got a savage dog?
You see, there's no way under the present rules for a referee to prove that the political players are lying to him about what Aussies really want. The only way we have now of telling the monarch what we want is through the parliament. But the politicians have got a hold of it and stuffed it. For example, if tomorrow Paul Keating decided to bring in the GST, the human rights legislation, and 5 million hill screamers from Timbuktu, every man Jack Aussie could be as mad as a hornet. But Parliament is the only official advice the referee has to what we, the people of Australia, want. Well, what can he do but accept it?
I mean, we're the ones out here.
We've got to do something about this, you know. We need something like the sixth ball changeover. We've got to find some way of telling the referee the truth in the way the politicians can't nobble.
What is the answer, Charlie?
It's called voter's veto. It's a rule that says that if Aussies don't want certain legislation, they petition the Governor-General and tell him so. If, say, 5% of Aussies make an effort to do this, Then at the end of each year, we hold a referendum about it, and everyone gets a say. And if we say no, that's
yeah,
it. The Governor-General withdraws the royal assent, which he is now entitled to do within 1 year of signing an act, and the legislation stoned dead. Finished. Kaput. Knackered. You give us that, me mates, and you can stuff every republic in the world up your politician's left nostril. We'd have something that works, that gives us the right to decide yes or no on one thing at a time. What we need is Aussies who've woken up, learned how to use constitutional monarchy, put in voters' veto, and then we can kick the politicians in the pants any day of the week we like. We won't even have to use it most years, because they'd see us coming and back off. There's still one thing. Under our constitution, only the politicians can propose rule changes, so what can we do to get voters' veto? Well, one thing is sure. You can make up your mind that you're not voting for any referendum for any republic whatsoever for the rest of your life until they give us voters' veto. Once they give it to us, it's simple. We still vote no. Who needs
too
it?
Right, mate.
Dead set.
You bloody bottler.
Now, if you reckon this is the thing, do this. Write to me and say, count me in. Don't send any money, just give your address. And don't write me a long letter, I can't read them all. Later on, if big mobs give it a go, I'll get some big-name Aussies to set something up. Pamphlets, trust funds, auditors, the works, and I'll give them your name. Somehow we'll scratch up enough to write to you all. But what you do about it is your business. Only the fair dinkum should write. It's over to you, mate. Yours faithfully, Charlie Pinwill. That's P-I-N-W-I-L-L, Charlie Pinwill, Rosewood, Queensland, 4340.
Hello, for $6, Charlie will post you out a copy of this tape, and if you reckon it's time for your dozy neighbours to wake up and do something, well, send in $40 and they'll post you 10 copies. Now, Charlie's got the copyright on this, of course, and I reckon we ought to do the right thing. What do you reckon, Phil? Give him a bit of encouragement. I mean, who knows what he'll do next? So give him a fair go and don't go copying him yourself just to do him out of a bowl. He'll even post you a script for $4. You know, fellas, I reckon Charlie's right.
Three cheers for Charlie.
We've got to put this about.
A lot of blokes want a couple of tapes so they can lend one around and always have one for themselves. So Charlie's got a special offer of two for $10, which seems to suit most. The address again is Charlie Pinwill, that's P-I-N-W-I-L-L, Rosewood 4340.